Well, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 7:19 on this Sens Game Day Tuesday with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. We are here until 10 o'clock this morning. Got a doubleheader of World Cup soccer for you again today. 10-2 for the two soccer games. Then no soccer for the next couple of days after that. And then we're down to the... feels like we're getting down to the real contenders here, starting... Even the teams that advanced out of the knockout stage or to the knockout stage feels like there's a few pretenders. Feels like the final eight; those are all potentials. Well, you're down to the fact if you win three games, you're a World Cup champion. So anyway, we'll have the two final round of 16 games for you coming up. 10-2 pregame show today at 5 o'clock from Canadian Tire Center, and then 7 o'clock face off the Los Angeles Kings in town. They're kicking off a 6-game road trip, by the way. Bringing Jonathan Quick with them, and he has not been very good so far this year for LA. But despite that, they are fifth in the Western Conference standing. So they've had a good start to overall, good record overall. And although Ottawa did beat them in overtime, Claude Giroux's game winner a couple of weeks ago. So anyway, we'll have lots of coverage of the Sens. Mike Johnson is our TSN Hockey Insider. He is ready to join us coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. After 9, we're going to talk some Red Blacks football as they continue to round out their coaching staff, yesterday announcing Baron Miles, the CFL Hall of Famer, the former most outstanding defensive player in the CFL in 2002, the former CFL Rookie of the Year in 1998. Baron Miles will join us on the show. He is the new defensive coordinator of the Red Blacks. He'll be coming up after 9 o'clock. He joins Kahari Jones, offensive coordinator. Of course, Bob Dice announced last week as the new head coach. So all that is on the way. More winning for you as well. Congratulations to Charlene Lyon. Charlene texted us, gave us the cue to text. She was lucky texter number 30. And Charlene and a guest are on their way, courtesy of TSN 1200, to Sens Skills, coming up January the 8th at Canadian Tire Center. We'll have another pair of tickets to give away to that event coming up later on in the show. We'll have a pair of weekend passes to the big women's hockey all-star weekend happening this weekend at Canadian Tire Center as well, featuring the likes of Marie-Philippe Poulin and Hillary Knight, and pretty much every U.S. and Canadian Olympic women's hockey player is going to be in Ottawa this weekend. So it's going to be absolutely fantastic. We'll have tickets to that event as well coming up. Okay, today, December the 6th, is a big anniversary as far as the Ottawa Senators are concerned. Let's take you to 32 years ago today in West Palm Beach to the Breakers Hotel and NHL, not commissioner as he was known then, NHL president John Ziegler.
The Board of Governors today have granted conditional franchises beginning in the 1992-93 season to the applicants representing the City of Ottawa. Yeah!
There you go. That was 32 years ago today, believe it or not. And Simmer, you were, what, at that point just, well, deciding if you were going to start a professional hockey career, or were you into the broadcasting in 1990?
No, I actually playing in the American Hockey League with Baltimore Skipjacks, right. But still a huge surprise being from Ottawa growing up and being a hockey player. Just did never see this coming. So it was incredible news. And very quickly after, I did get into scouting in 1992. So I remember coming to Ottawa and also going to Tampa Bay. And you have to remember, they were playing in, I don't think it was called the Cow Palace, but I'm sure cows live there. It was just a terrible barn that they were playing in. So the early transition and coming back to Ottawa, see the Civic Center all done up, it was pretty cool. And like I said, I'm sure everyone thought the same back in the day, that there's no way you ever thought the Ottawa Senators would get an NHL franchise. So job well done by everybody involved.
There is still the, 800-page leather-bound book that they put together that was essentially the centerpiece of their presentation, that there are still a few that exist. Many. I'm sure that Cyril Leader still has one. I'm sure Bruce Firestone probably has one as well, but there aren't a lot of them. But that was the big, and I ended up being down there covering that event as the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young reporter that I was back in the day with my, I didn't have the gigantic cell phone like Gord Wilson of CFRA did. Yeah, he was Mr. Big Time.
Well, they had the budget.
He had the huge phone. I had to run to try to find a payphone to break the news to Ottawa that we were getting an NHL team.
You didn't ask him if he could borrow his phone for a second?
Yeah. Well, at that point, I had lost the scoop anyway, because it had come. And the story's been told a million times, but it came so quickly.
They did the presentation. We got down there, I think, on the 4th, on the night of the 4th. It was a terrible day just to try to get down there because of weather. We eventually get down there after flying all day on the 4th. The 5th was the day of the presentations. And the 6th, I think they called them in at noon. And Bruce Firestone was out there, you know, that Otto had won, and they had to go find him because he was out for a run. They didn't think that the announcement was going to come that quickly. They thought they would debate it a whole lot longer, and they had to go find him, and then they brought him in through, the kitchen of the Breakers Hotel, I think the story goes. He walks into the room, and there's Phil Esposito, who's with the Tampa group at that point, and he goes, and that's when it dawned on him that, we're going to do this thing. We actually... Now, it turns out that Ottawa and Tampa were the only franchises or ownership groups willing to scratch out a check for $50 million. And even though Hamilton at that point had a rink and Ottawa didn't, I think it was Ron Joyce, right? The Tim Hortons guy was fronting the Hamilton bid. He wasn't willing to go that far, so the story goes.
Yeah.
And that is really the reason. And Ottawa didn't have the money. I mean, well documented that they had to scrape it all together. As we know, it was 10 years of counting as many pennies and nickels and dimes as you could to try to make it all work. But that was the story 32 years ago today.
Yeah, and so interesting. And I won't say it's the $50 million that Donald Trump said was a bad investment on the Cowboys, but who would have ever thunk even this, 30 years later, JR, where are the economics? And you've got an Ottawa Senators team that's probably going to be sold for at least $1 billion Canadian. So I'm assuming that's a pretty good investment. But at that time, it was smoke and mirrors, and that's when we started to hear about escrow money. And certainly in the case of Tampa Bay, with some type of ownership that existed in Japan that nobody had ever met, it was just, it's a whole different time. Would not pass a smell test or taste or whatever the hell you want to say these days from ownership groups. But amazing how far they both have come. Tampa won 3 Stanley Cups, where Ottawa's at now. And Tampa in a new building, Ottawa soon to hopefully be in their third building. So, yeah, it's been quite a ride, but... Now you have a seat at the table, and it will be a long-term thing, which was not the case for the National Hockey League. Obviously, Winnipeg and Quebec examples, JR, but, the financial stability of the NHL is just night and day. And you're talking about not only that cost at the time, you're also trying to figure out player salaries and realizing that there could be losses on a yearly basis, and that's coming out of somebody's pocket, and who wants to pay it?
Yeah, and when you don't have any money to begin with,
you're already borrowing
the money. And at that point, don't forget, in the early 1990s, there was a huge economic downturn at that time as well. So they were trying to pull this all together, and there were some roadblocks put in the way, like is the Carp River navigable? You need to build your own interchange off the highway, like stuff that this point as cities, I don't say they roll out the red carpet, and certainly in this country, there is not a huge appetite to completely bankroll a building, although they will make things easier for you, most certainly. But the interviews have been done a million times with Cyril and with Bruce Firestone, but it was tough sledding.
Yeah, no, it really was. He had a low Canadian dollar, chair, and you had a mentality, and people think about Canada now. Well, try doing it back then when you get into commercial airlines. But the biggest part and some crazy things that would happen were, guys that were in the United States, if I was making, say, 200 U.S., my contract converted to Canadian. How many Americans or any Canadian that has any economic background, JR, wants to turn their salary on a low Canadian dollar with higher taxes into Canadian money? There were a lot of obstacles. And again, no salary cap. So you're trying to navigate where you go financially. And what was also crazy from an Ottawa perspective was kind of trying to match up Alexander Daigle with Eric Lindros. There was no cap on entry-level contracts. And at the same time, they kind of made a splash with Daigle based on appearance, French-Canadian. But they also doled out a huge contract by the standards at that time for no particular reason. Almost felt like a bit of a marketing-ish effort. And it was actually at the draft in Quebec City. It was a big deal at the time. People were pretty excited about Mr. Daigle being drafted Ottawa.
Yes, of course, he uttered the line, nobody remembers who was drafted number 2, which will remind people was Chris Pronger, who's in the Hall of Fame, and Alexander Daigle is not, unfortunately. I think they gave him, it was his first contract. At that point, right, there weren't rookie contracts. It was like whatever you can negotiate. I think it was 5 years, and does $12 million seem like the right amount?
I have no idea, JR. I just remember it was an awful lot, for the unproven. And like I said, a little bit of it was the whole Lindros factor at the time. Of coming in and then what had happened in Philadelphia. Yeah, and then they decided at that point, boy, we got to get this thing figured out here on entry-level deals. And like I said, so much has changed in the day. And just even at that time, the ability to renegotiate contracts was a tough go here for the Ottawa Senators of Mr. Yashin, but they found their way, and by the time Gauthier and Martin had come in, you know, they had to rearrange the furniture, but some real good things were in place, and then you had a real nice run there for the Ottawa Senators.
Hard to think, and again, there was another round of expansion the year after that, right? Florida and Anaheim came in, and Ottawa and Tampa came in 92. Florida and Anaheim came in 93. Then, what, about 5-6 years later, it was Nashville, Atlanta, Minnesota. Who am I missing? There's three or four teams that came in then. Mm-hmm. And then there was nothing until Vegas came in 2017, and then we had Seattle come in 2020. Yeah. Hard to think that if you know, they didn't roll the dice, as it were, and do what they did 32 years ago today and decide to bid on a team, even if we're talking about the expansion in the late 90s, let alone what's happening today. There's not an NHL team here.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think there's anybody. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember what the expansion fee was for the late 90s teams. It wasn't this, what, was $500 million for Vegas and $650 for Seattle?
Yeah. But
I believe is the math on that.
But you go back to the number that stands out for me was the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. I thought Michael Eisner used the $75 million he made off the movie, Jared, to pay for the franchise. And you also had a split of franchise at the time when you had Minnesota and the Gunn brothers took half of the franchise and moved to San Jose half stayed in Minnesota. You had relocation. But I will say this, you know, I don't disagree with what you're saying. If you had somebody just like Winnipeg that's willing to bankroll it, but now you look at Quebec City, and going back to what you mentioned, my first year of junior hockey, 1985-86, the Cops Coliseum opened, and at that point, it was a feeling of it, build it and they'll come, right? And it was almost an afterthought. Well, of course, and to understand in an ownership group that wouldn't go with a building in place seems pretty strange. And also, I see now in Hamilton, they're at the point, which does make sense 37 years later. I see where the junior team's having to play in Brantford because they've got to redo that building.
They're doing it a two-year refurb.
Yeah, and that's where, realistically, that building, other than the outside, probably has to be like the Saddle Dome, completely redone. And that's where you're at 37 years later. Who would have thunk? And I'm sure that makes the people in Quebec City awfully nervous for, you know, a building that they spent, what, $400 or $500 million to build. And, you know, like you said, I don't see that happen. The next move, in my estimation, will be two more U.S. franchises. And I think most people agree because they do everything they can for Arizona. It feels like the next expansion to me, Jared, would be Houston. That would appear to be the obvious. And that'll be for a nice little $1 billion.
Yeah. Billion U.S., you believe?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, okay.
Some of these people, and he's been rumored to want a team for a long time. It just feels, okay, let's go 750.
Yeah, that would seem like a big jump from 650 to a billion.
Oh, for sure.
Who's he? Are you talking about, is Les Alexander? Is that the guy from Houston?
I believe so. Yeah. He owns the NBA team and owns the building there. Is that correct?
I don't remember. That's the name I associate, have moved on into somebody else's hands. But Houston is the fourth biggest city in the United States.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. And even the economics and kind of a corporate standpoint, this is one of the shames to me that Atlanta never made it. That was an area there that I think, and again, the ownership, and then you can argue with, you know, the, I guess the fans, but just the product and the way it was handled. That's the one that should have worked a second time around in Atlanta, but Houston, I think, will be next.
So I would think that if they're going to expand again, and let's face it, if there's $750 million up for grabs, that all of the money goes to the owners. They're probably not going to turn their back on that, but let's say they want to expand by two. If Houston is an obvious choice, is Quebec City not in the running at that point?
Bit of an
olive branch Canadian fans?
You hear that a lot. I guess it's just really a question of that population, you know, who's willing to bankroll it. And then I guess part of it, Jaron, you'd know better than me, you know, what kind of a factor is a TV deal, which it could be a positive, and you have to rival against the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, you certainly hear about Portland, Oregon. You hear about other places. But, no, I would assume that it might be a possibility. What has also, I think, helped a lot, Jaron, and this is one of the things that has to be discussed, the quality of the National Hockey League player 30 years ago to what we're at now. Mm-hmm. It is night and day. And I'm not saying you could expand to 50 teams and be okay, but there are not many NHL teams where they roll through. And, you know, you look at it and say, oh, my God, where, you know, that original Ottawa team, you know, that was a rough go to watch from a talent standpoint.
With all due respect to our friend Jamie Baker, Senator original.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be taking a hard run at Bakes
now. No, I never do. He was actually one of the better players on the team. But you know, it really has, Jerry. Like, the European effect, along with the American, and Canada continue to turn out at the highest end very good players, you're in a better spot. And what has shown as well, the impact of young draft picks in the top five or top 10 for the level that they're at 18 years old, JR, is night and day in comparison to the 90s. And I can also think to Tampa Bay, they were a little bit quick out of the gate, I believe, in the standings, because they had Darren Puppa, much like Florida had Van Beesbrook. But they rolled out that with Hammerlick, I think Klima. Let's throw in a Brian Bradley. And they actually had a fairly competitive team riding pretty good power play and a real good goaltender when they entered the league, where, you know, from an Ottawa perspective, it was, you know,
They had the seven-year plan, right? Yeah. Randy Sexton said that. Well, yeah. After he came in, Mel Bridgman was the original general manager. But the whole thing was laid out with a seven-year plan, too.
Yeah.
And they pretty much followed that timeline. Now, yeah. It was pretty rough going for the first 3 or 4 years. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Some of the worst hockey record-wise in National Hockey League history. But once Jacques Martin came in and Pierre Gauthier as well, they really turned the corner. Yeah. And we all know for about 10 years there, the Ottawa Senators were among the most winning teams in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I see a lot of parallels with where the franchise is at right now. And when you certainly enter in new ownership, it feels like there's a lot of great things in place. And if you actually go back to Pierre Gauthier and you look at the moves that were made, it was as much the coaching as Jacques Martin, JR, and the stability. And obviously you continue to have the growth of some of the young players, but when you look at the moves that Gauthier made, and certainly the Redden for Berard, I think was a terrific move. I'm not so sure that Pavel Dimitriev for Christer Olsen ended up being all that great, but it was just the stability that the two of them brought at the time. And Jacques installed a system, and then it just was perfect timing. And, you know, it took a little while for them to get there, but they did it on not a great defense, not great goaltending, but a very organized crew under Jacques.
All right, there you go. 32 years ago today, Ottawa awarded its NHL franchise. We'll take a break, 7:35. The franchise that exists now is on the ice tonight, taking on the LA Kings. We'll get to the very latest on the lineup, including Artem Zub's injury, which is going to keep him out a little bit longer than they had hoped for. And Nikita Zaitsev, backup, played on the weekend, and the coach kind of come into his defenseman's defense. As well yesterday. So we'll chat about that. We got a big comeback by Brady and the Bucks in Monday Night Football, and a crazy NHL night last night in Vancouver specifically, where the Canucks fell way behind the Habs and came all the way back to win in overtime. So we'll get to all of that when we return here on a Tuesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:42 on this Sens Game Day Tuesday. LA Kings in town for a 7 o'clock face-off. More on the lineup, etc. in just a second. This text comes in at 12-1200. It says, who would have thought that Tampa would have schooled Ottawa on how to build hockey teams? That's maybe the most surprising thing. Well, not really. It's who's in charge, right? Doesn't really have to do with the geographically where you're located. We have smart people in not-so-hockey-centric places, and we have not-so-smart people in hockey-centric.
Yeah,
places, so.
A real bad take there. But what is interesting, though, is you follow the ownership part of Tampa Bay. Hey, that initial one with Tony and Phil, super characters, and they tried to do the best. And then you entered into the fella from, Detroit that ended up buying it on the IHL team, which drafted Le Cavalier. And then you went to Oren Kulas and Lenny Barry. Hey, they have certainly, under the new ownership of Mr. Vinnick, have become the gold standard, JR, but you're right. I mean, you could set up shop anywhere you want. That's why we've seen the likes of Anaheim to L.A. to Dallas to Florida, or not Florida, Tampa, all win Stanley Cups, including Carolina.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Lightning, hey, Simmer, the Lightning's first barn was the Thunder Dome, which is now where the Rays play.
No, it wasn't, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, I'm pretty well-versed in this one. Doing that. No, they played in this tiny little barn, and then you're right. Now, one of the best parts, when they played over in St. Pete, you got to stay at the Stouffer Vanoy, one of my favorite hotels on the circuit, JR. But no, previous to that, because I had a bunch of buddies, Billy Holder, Steve Maltese on that team. Yeah, they played it. It was like a 5,000 or 7,000 seat, this dungy old barn down there, JR. And then they moved to the Thunderdome, and then they built the new building, which was touch and go. And I tell that story as well, JR. I remember going there when it was first built, the new building, and you go underneath and it looked like Home Depot. I'm like, can I get some parts here? They had completely run out of money. And this is where it's historical stuff is funny. And I say that they had that one deck at the far end and they had run out of money to do with anything, money to build it. So they said, okay, just put some tables there. Now they're 30 years or 20 years later. Everyone's like, everybody wants common space. I'm like, whoa, what a genius idea. And that's how that came to be, and that's the trend where a lot of other NHL teams are going.
Well,
that's a history of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, back when Ottawa was building its building, right? It was all about suites.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Over 200 at Canadian Tire Center, and they've blown a few of them out. But now we see, you know, Club Bell essentially is, and that the idea for Club Bell, the big kind of open area with so-called social spaces, actually came from, I believe, what they did in Tampa. Which is at the one. Now, I haven't been to the rink in Tampa in quite a few years, and I don't remember that being the case when I was there.
Yeah.
But they essentially have one end of the arena that's more of a big social space.
Yeah, and you travel around here, and one of the other ones was Camden Yards when it opened, because you're not just looking at necessarily the building, the design, the amenities. And Camden Yards is one of the first ones to have a suite level, JR, that decided to put the old buffet in there. There was just a realization of getting food to people and making them feel like they can have as much as they want when they want was another thing. And when you look at the Club Bell model, a lot of people don't want to sit around and order a dinner, right? It's like, hey, I want to get there, want to eat, and want to get to my seats and have a couple of drinks and enjoy the match.
Right. All right. Well, they'll be there tonight, 7 o'clock face-off with the LA Kings in town. The update on Artem Zub, if you missed it yesterday, 3 to 4 weeks. It's a fracture of the jaw from taking the puck in the face in the win over the Rangers on Friday. So Zub is out of the lineup, so they'll presumably roll with the same six that they played on Saturday night in the victory over San Jose, and that will, in all likelihood, be the case going forward until, well, for the month of December, which, you know, again, they're playing better hockey, they're getting some results, but this is going to be a real test to the Sens, because that defense that was already not very deep is now removing one of your three best defensemen.
Yeah, no, and you look to Wednesday, and again, coming off of the West Coast swing, but you're also talking about a game Friday, Jerry. You tie at the last second and win, and in the case of, it was a real good effort against San Jose, but a lot of high-danger chances. So, Simmer's formula, Sean Simpson, Auto Canada's formula for the month, got to ride that power play, and the goaltender is going to have a nice hot tandem, because I don't think it's realistic. And it wasn't like all of a sudden Saturday they locked it down. You can talk about the penalty kill and the standing ovation and all the work from Hamonic, but at the end of the day, it was the Forsberg show. So going to need some real good goaltending here for this month, and I'm assuming especially on Thursday and Saturday.
Talbot tonight or Forsberg?
Well, I assume Talbot, because I think what you said, hey, he came off of a real good game against the Rangers. I don't think there's a wrong choice, but as you also talked about, if Talbot wins tonight, it would be strange not to have him play against Dallas. And I would assume that I'm a bigger fan of Forsberg, big pitcher, but I would assume the coaching staff has a little bit of a nod towards Talbot and the stability he's brought. So I'll say Talbot, and if he wins, I assume he plays Thursday against Dallas.
Yeah, that's maybe the more the bigger question is who would play Thursday, and maybe we're into the win and you stay in, because you know Forsberg has been hurt quite a bit, right? And well, and Talbot was hurt obviously to begin the season, so both of them have taken turns being injured. There hasn't been much time when the two of them been healthy together, but now they're both healthy. Both are coming off. You know, Forsberg in the last game or two has been good. Talbot's been good for probably a few more games than that. So this is the best. I guess the point is Ottawa's goaltending is about in as good a place as it's been all season.
Yeah,
right,
and you're right, because you'll get into the formula. If Talbot plays tonight and you win, well, God, you're trying to climb back to 500. Not that you worry about second-guessing. I wouldn't have a problem if they played Forsberg Thursday. But even to that, you win a couple. Now you go into Nashville, it'd be hard to switch it out. And when you have the spacing of a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday, yeah, it'd be easy to ride the hot hand. And also, I don't know Zach Burke at all, JR, but I saw you with that news where he got hurt during practice. And you think about in minor hockey now, and they've talked about the warm-ups, which I do find ridiculous, guys without helmets as you prep for a game. But, you know, in minor hockey, how dangerous that can be. So certainly wishing him, where I saw he's having some issues with, you know, getting on the ice and the lights and all that stuff. And man, you hate to see something like that happen.
Yeah, that was so from a puck in the head when they were on the West Coast.
Yeah, exactly.
On the Western trip. So it's been a couple of weeks now to the point where, he can't function full-time as the goalie coach of the SN. So certainly wish him the best. Now, for now, it would appear that Nikita Zaitsev is the person to come in for Artem Zub. Played, of course, last minute on Friday, and then played again on Saturday as Zub was out. Of course, well-documented Zaitsev struggles here in Ottawa, to the point where he is most certainly the fan whipping boy, I think it's fair to say. He goes down to Belleville, comes back up, doesn't look like he's going to dress. Now through injuries, he is dressing, and, had a couple of – he was decent on the weekend. He certainly wasn't a problem, we'll put it that way. But it has been a struggle for him to the point where DJ Smith kind of came to his defense from a mental health point of view yesterday.
A lot of times we talk about mental health, but maybe not mental health of the players themselves. And when the player's feeling good, you're going to get their best game. Clearly, he was not in a great spot prior to going down. And, you know, he came back up, maybe just turned the world off for a few days, came back up with a refreshed mind. He's the first time I've seen him smile in a while. Obviously, he's carried heavy a lot of the criticism that's come to him. But he's had a smile on, and it was great to see the guys, you know, give him the goggles. They realize a guy that's hurting and that's come up. And it's great to see for a group that they're always looking to pick each other up.
Yeah. Cam Talbot, for those that missed the story, so he was the player of the game, got the swim goggles is what they're doing this year. In Friday's win over the Rangers, and so the player that has the goggles awards it to the next time they win, and he gave it to Zaitsev on Saturday. And it was not because Nikita Zaitsev was the best player in the win on Saturday, but I think it's more of a kind of a mental pick-me-up more than anything.
I really appreciate the human aspect here and understand the pressures. I understand the pressures of life, working in professional sports. I've worked in the KHL. When I hear this type of stuff and then you want to trace back to, let's have an honest discussion about how this all came about. You had a young coach come over, handpick a player that was on a terrible contract, bring him over, play him in a slot with Thomas Chabot that he was not capable of. You want to talk about building something. This is an Ottawa Senators team that tried to trade the player all summer and waived him to the American Hockey League. And then to kind of throw out that all the pressure that the market's putting on him, hey, let's get real here as to where the pressure's coming from and how this was built out, and comments from a general manager and coach that someone was an elite defenseman when there wasn't a person on the planet that thought this. So I take that when you may build up these excuses. And as far as Nikita Zaitsev, he, other than being on social media, would not have to feel any pressure other than, I understand at home, it's not fun if you get booed a little bit. But the building of the situation and pretending how this has been handled, if you care about a player so much, which is a professional business, and I know you do care about him, but when you're trying to trade a guy and you waive him to send to the American Hockey League, yeah, let's have a real conversation about how the situation's been created versus blaming the outside noise of what is very accurate of where the player has, how he's performed at $4.5 million a year. And there's also, I'll say this, this market, because where the team was at, any other circumstance, he would have been bought out 3 years ago. So I like I say, okay, I understand. I don't like to see anybody in a tough spot. I've been there myself, but let's be factual about how this has all been created.
Yeah, I think it's easy for all of us to say, if you know, if we're in the shoes of Nikita Zaitsev, like turn off the outside noise, like turn off your social media. I think it's something that's a little easier said than done, especially when you're in a hockey market. Now, I don't pretend to know what his life is like outside of the hockey rink, but I think all of us, when we're feeling that way, it's kind of like, well, why don't you just not look at your phone? Again, as I say, it's easier said than done. But to your point of, hey, listen, did the coach and the general manager, did they build the player up? Absolutely. Has he had his struggles, and did they talk him up more than probably his level of play was worthy of? Absolutely. There's no doubting that. But listen, I also understand when a coach comes to the defense of his players as well, and his fellow players do. I get that whole part of it. That's part of the team.
I love it. I love that they're doing it, but I also don't need any excuses or any blame. And to the player, first of all, this is not a tough market, and this isn't a place that you leave and people are tracking down Nikita Zaitsev to give him a hard time. Hey, this could be controlled as much as you want. I know you said easier said than done, but I live the Toronto Maple Leafs experience for the players, and I can tell you, that's on a whole different level. Fast forward to a tough U.S. market, and I've seen in all places, Washington, D.C., the likes of Larry Murphy to Kevin Hatcher get booed out of the market. Like, they don't even know. They've never even picked up an ice hockey stick, JR. So any idea or thought that this is a difficult situation, it's not. But we also always respect the mental health of any human being.
Yeah. And listen, you can control a lot of that narrative by your play. And maybe Nikita Zaitsev has found a better, if he's in a better spot mentally, as DJ Smith talks about, maybe that translates into a better play on the ice. That remains to be seen. If we're talking about some short-term results that have turned in Ottawa's favor, it's even been a shorter track here for Nikita Zaitsev. Played a couple of decent games on the weekend. We'll see if he can continue that, because let's face it, he is option A right now. As it stands with Zub being out of the lineup for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, but I also argue that, Gerald. First of all, we know he's not a first-pairing defenseman. We know that the pressure of playing with Chabot is a lot. I would still tuck him down and throw Branstrom up there with Chabot or hold him, but we'll see how it plays out. That's a recognition of this was forced from day one. DeMelo had come off of a good season playing with Shabbat, and all of a sudden in training camp, there's Zaitsev. He's not a first-pairing defenseman, and the pressure of playing with Thomas Shabbat's not easy. So we'll see how it goes this month.
All right, 7 o'clock face-off, 5 o'clock will be the pregame show. Sens taking on the LA Kings tonight. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and then we'll get you set. Mike Johnson is going to join us coming up after 8 o'clock. Mike, of course, was in New York to watch that Brady Tkachuk game on Friday night. Be fun to get his retrospective of that night and a look ahead to the week ahead for the Sens, and look around the NHL, that crazy game in Vancouver last night where the Canucks came all the way back from 4-0 down to beat Montreal. Hey, if you'd like to go see the best women hockey players in from North America, we should say, play this weekend here in Ottawa. It's the PWHPA, Professional Women's Hockey Players Association All-Star Weekend. So they got a couple of games at Canadian Tire Center on Saturday, and then a big All-Star game and a skills competition coming up on Sunday. We got a weekend pass for two to give away right now. If you'd like to go, text us right now and say, hey, I'm free to go see some hockey on the weekend. All right, text us right now at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Just need your first and last name. That's it. We'll draw one name from everybody that gets their name in the next 3-4 minutes. And you're on your way to see some great women's hockey this weekend. Marie-Philippe Poulin, Hillary Knight, just a laundry list of the best North American-based female players coming here this weekend. All right, our winner coming up, and much more as we continue along on this Sens Game Day Tuesday. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 7:59. Congratulations to Jeff Deneau. Jeff, we drew your name. You're on your way to the PWHPA All-Star Weekend happening this weekend at Canadian Tire Center to see some of the very best women hockey players in the world. They're doing a couple of games on Saturday, and then there's a 3-on-3 All-Star. Well, I think there's 6 games in total, and then a championship game, and there's a skills competition as well. If you in particular have a young girl hockey player in the family, absolutely love it. So, Jeff, congratulations. Enjoy the weekend. By the way, tickets can be purchased for all the weekend hockey happening at Canadian Tire Center through Ticketmaster.ca. We'll have tickets to give away all this week. 7:59, we're going to take a break. Top of the hour news and sports update is on the way. And then when we come back, Mike Johnson will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Sens. As we mentioned, Mike was at Madison Square Garden. That was really something. That was one of those games that, boy, it was something to watch or listen. Be another total thing to be in the rink that night to watch the Brady Tkachuk show. So we'll talk to Mike Johnson about that and look ahead to tonight's game versus the Kings and everything else hockey with MJ. That's when we return after a top of the hour news and sports update coming up next on this Sens Game Day Tuesday on Sports Radio TSN 1200.